Hello and welcome. I'm Senior Director of News, Kate Evans Korea, and here is a roundup of the news, tips, and other resources you'll find this week on Search SMB. The U.S. House of Representatives passed an anti-spyware bill Tuesday that sets criminal penalties for those who defraud consumers and businesses through the use of spyware. The anti-spyware bill, sponsored by Representative Zoe Lofgren of California, establishes a sentence of 5 years in prison for individuals who commit fraud with spyware. The bill is much less complex than a similar piece of legislation which was approved by the House Energy and Commerce Committee recently. That legislation included a 21-page set of regulations which dictated how software and advertising companies should inform and obtain consent from computer users before installing spyware for legitimate business purposes. Anything with 21 pages of dense regulations that specify what software can and cannot do, written by a lot of lawyers without computer security training, or even if written by computer security people, is going to have problems, said Dan Bloom, Vice President and Director of the Burton Group. Bloom said Congress was better off staying at a high level with general legal guidelines. He said the courts could fill in the details. Hopefully, they've created a deterrent that makes it possible to prosecute the bad guys, or makes it easier to prosecute the bad guys. The bill makes it a crime to use spyware to intentionally obtain or transmit personal information with the intent to defraud or injure a person or cause damage to a protected computer. It also makes it a crime to use spyware to intentionally impair the security protection of a computer for such purposes. Bloom said this legislation is particularly important because it makes the attempt to use spyware for fraud a crime. The bill also allocates $10 million to the Attorney General for use in prosecutions of such case of spyware crime and the practices of phishing and farming. A new report out earlier this month finds that SMBs are diving deep into the software as a service market. But on its heels is a report from another major research firm suggesting that SMBs may be kicking the tires, but they're not buying. So which is it, boom or bust? Well, it really depends on which side of the fence you're standing on, say experts. It's a delivery model that has everything to lure SMBs: easy installation, low cost. But some SMBs say they still have issues with security and flexibility. According to Sagatuck Technology, a Westport, Connecticut-based research firm, the percentage of businesses with one or more SaaS applications in place increased from 11% in 2006 to 26% in 2007. Growth among SMBs was even more dramatic. SMB adoption rose from 9% in 2006 to 27% in 2007. William McNee, founder and CEO of Sagatuck, said by 2011, a good 30% of all software deployed in businesses will be SaaS. There are plenty of proponents of SaaS for SMBs, including Gartner, which just published a survey on SMB 2000 IT spending plans. But this recent poll shows that SMBs have some doubts about SaaS. According to Gartner, 45% of 307 U.S. SMBs said they don't trust their data to third parties, such as SaaS vendors. Only 7% of SMBs strongly believed that SaaS was suitable for their organizations, and only 17% said they would consider SaaS when its adoption became more widespread. SMBs are control freaks, says Gartner Vice President and Research Director James Browning. They don't like giving up control more so than large enterprises. It's just the culture. They have less applications and less data. That's their lifeline, and they don't want someone else messing with their data. Despite his firm's findings, Browning said he is seeing SMBs kick the tires on SaaS applications, such as online backup. But he said they are shying away from mission-critical applications. A recent announcement by the U.S. Department of Defense that it would ban military personnel, including those serving overseas, from accessing social networking sites such as YouTube and MySpace mirrors what many U.S. businesses have done for years: protect their networks from websites they deem security risks, productivity busters, and bandwidth hogs. Certainly, censorship of personal communications is nothing new for the armed services, justified by concerns over mission safety and national security. However, what makes this latest enforcement policy significant and prickly is that it denies access to a popular channel of communications that military personnel rely on to exchange messages, photos, video, and audio with family and friends. Members of the military can still access the sites on their own computers and networks, but according to reports, most soldiers and sailors in Iraq and Afghanistan don't have access to personal computers. But members of the business world are neither surprised nor moved by the ban. I think it's prudent at this point for the Department of Defense to act in a manner that is consistent with what businesses have been doing, says Ron O'Brien, senior security analyst with security vendor Sophos. At home, a lot of these applications are acceptable, and the manner in which you use them is at your discretion. But when you bring it into a work environment, there are a number of impacts. The most significant is the security risk. Earlier this month, the U.S. Army cracked down on personal blogs over security concerns. According to reports, the new directive requires U.S. soldiers to get approval from a commander before posting a personal blog. Some observers say the new rules to block social networking sites focus on seemingly innocuous information and argue that these sites are an important way for soldiers to keep in touch with family and friends, and taking them away is unfair. But the reality, say experts, and what the DoD has learned, is that popular or not, these sites pose significant issues to the network. And the organization, whether it be a business or the U.S. Armed Forces, have an obligation to prevent access if it significantly impacts the integrity of their networks. As a 20-year veteran of the U.S. Army and now the manager of network systems at Potomac Hospital, where social networking sites are blocked, Tony Davis can see both sides of the issue, protecting the network versus accommodating the soldier. Although he believes that from a technical perspective, the Department of Defense did the right thing, he knows, too, that eliminating the outlet in which many soldiers were able to stay connected with their families will not be without controversy. You don't make a decision like that lightly, he says. The system grows up around you. Then you have to make a decision to shut it down rather than make a decision to allow it. There will be people who will contact their congressmen over this. Bottom line, there is no business purpose for those sites, he says. It doesn't meet the military's goals and objectives. I wouldn't want my people connecting to those sites. That's why we block it here. Instant messaging can be beneficial internally and externally for SMBs. It's also affordable and easy to deploy. But if IM is not configured securely, it can be costly, says Joel Dubin, an independent computer security analyst. IM allows viruses, Trojans, and other malware to piggyback into your networks far easier than email attachments. IM messages can contain links to malicious websites and confidential data can be compromised. Spam over IM is also a threat. So security for IM is essential, says Dublin, and has some suggestions and best practices for securing IM without breaking the bank. First, designate just one IM tool. Two, restrict external IM usage, allowing usage only for employees who have to communicate real time. Don't use consumer IM products from America Online, Yahoo, or Microsoft. Use enterprise instant messaging software such as Jabber or Aconix. Three, make sure your IM provider offers some kind of encryption. You can always encrypt with Secure Sockets Layer at no extra cost. Four, restrict access. Like your internal IM servers, those hosting your EIM should be locked down with restricted access, hardening, and updated patches and antiviral protection. And lastly, restrict communications. Configure buddy lists on your EIM to restrict communications to only known and trusted parties. This will prevent a malicious user from trying to access your network via IM. All these articles, tips, and other resources are available this week on Search SMB. I'm Kate Evans-Correa. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.